Blog Talk Radio.
You're asking me to vouch for you. Well, the funny thing about vouching for someone, James, is that when that someone shows himself to be less than what was promised, every decision you take from that point on is second-guessed. And that, in my line of work, is suicide. And besides, why does a cool, mellow fellow like yourself want to hang around with a bunch of stuffy old white guys?
Same reason you want to hang around those stuffy old white guys. Power. Connection. But let's keep it real. I'm just a cool, mellow fellow. Just shucking and jiving. Crip walking, basketball playing, singing, dancing, and taking out your garbage. That's what I am to you.
You're right. You are African-American. And myself and my friends, for the most part, don't care for the company of African-Americans. Quite frankly, we're entertained by you. We're thrilled by your high-flying acrobatics on the basketball court. That wonderful sense of rhythm you have. Your animal athleticism. But apart from that, we have no use for you. Understand? I mean, let's face it, James. Do you set a place at your dinner table for your pit bulls? Now, is this keeping it real enough for you?
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
You know, folks, that intro was from the 2009 direct-to-DVD release, Blood and Bone, featuring Michael Jai White, and the two actors that were actually in that exchange, Eamon Walker and Julian Sands, excellent actors. I guess the irony is that, you know, Mr. Walker, the African-American gentleman, and I say American, I emphasize American, is actually an Afro-Brit. So it's interesting that irrespective of the actor's ethnicity or nationality, the Brits can do an effective American accent, but you don't know who you're talking to. This kind of an undercurrent to even that riveting scene. I mean, Blood and Bone is definitely a B-level movie, again, straight to DVD. I mean, for Christ's sake, Kimbo Slice is also, MMA's Kimbo Slice is in this movie. But Gina Carano is also in there. But the fact that you're talking about the exchange is about perceptions of black folk, and even the actor person in the sense that he's an Afro-Brit. So everything's screwed up. Folks, rent, download, purchase, Blood and Bone, 2009, Michael Jai White. This, of course, is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. We're going to give you 2 hours of funk, fire, in this fact-finding mission. Let's put it that way. It's a fact-finding mission, as always, as ever. So let's go to a groove first. We have a lot to get into. Matter of fact, our stalwart listenership submitted something to our attention via email. Always the same theme, isn't it? Especially for a show called Afro Nerd. She's not ghetto enough, folks. She's not ghetto enough. Well, she's not ghetto at all. But the ghetto folk, according to Fox, going to be, they're not going to find themselves endearing in, or connected to Dr. Rice. And you know what? You know what? You'll find out what I think once we get into the groove. Let's go to a quick groove, as I said. This is Burn by the Cool and the Deadly, giving you a bit of Afropunk. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Especially in that case, Afropunk. That was Burn the cool, and the deadly. Folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Ask Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, it's always the same number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. And as the entitled show says or states, Afro Nerd Radio, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, where is the captain? Where is he? Captain Kirk, you're needed in engineering. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Now I'm going to do this for feces and giggles, for feces and giggles. Some people would say, go ahead and just do the damn thing. But I'm doing this damn thing just for feces and giggles, just for feces and giggles. Now, I'm going to talk to you about evolution. Evolution. Keep in mind, evolution is not a proven fact. It is a theory. It is a theory. Even though a lot of people leave school thinking that this is a proven fact. It is a theory. Now, the theory of evolution sounds and looks very sound until you get to human beings. Now, people who study hominids, for the uninitiated, that's any of the family of erect bipedal primate mammals, including recent humans, they say that you would need 20 to 30 evolvements in order to get to modern-day man, depending on the researcher. Some say 20, some say 30. This is true. Look it up, open source all over the Internet. So that's not really a missing link. You're missing a team or part of a football player squad in order to get where we are, based on that information. We also know when researchers, these bones that they say are early humans and etc., they fit the skeletons in a certain way, like their arms should be longer, meaning which they go in with a hypothesis and they tailor the narrative, because when people have went back in and have adjusted these skeletons, they say it looks a bit more human-like, not ape-like. What is going on here? This is why you can never go in with a hypothesis, because when you go in with a hypothesis, you begin to tailor the narrative. You understand? You just have to look at the facts. Now, let's look at animals briefly, which where it seems evolution is definitely correct. We know most animals, not all, run faster than humans and also can run longer. We know apes, their muscle is 5 times stronger. Some trainers say 7 times stronger than human beings. For you non-enumerate types, that means a 200-pound ape would have the physical strength of a 1,000-pound human. And yes, a 1,000-pound human, if there were any running around that are athletic, would be able to push back a 200-pound ape, because why? More mass. That's common sense. Also, we know, not all, but most animals, they have fur, live anywhere, move with the seasons. You don't have to tell a bear when to hibernate. They know when to hibernate. Automatic. We also know animals have a tendency to know when earthquakes are coming and natural disasters. You hear the stories that mice, you know, leave the ship before something is about to happen. So they seem to be attuned to what's going on the planet. We also know dogs before their owners come home. So dogs seem to know what's going on. Meanwhile, you don't know anything. But you evolved, though. This is what they're telling you. All right. Now let's look at humans. I've seen a cat walking around outside in 15-degree weather, no problem. Meanwhile, I'm all bundled up going, oh, man. Cat is walking, no problem. You know why? The cat is adapted to the planet. I am not. So, one, we wear clothes. We do not have any fur. We even wear sandals at times. Even you see this with indigenous tribes across the planet. The American Indian used to wear moccasins, thin type of shoe, but it's still a form of protection. You even see this with indigenous tribes to this day. Sometimes they do go barefoot for certain things, but they slip back on their little thin sheath made from like animal skins or something else. They figure out how to make it. Something's fatally flawed with our foot. Can't do like the animals. We also build huge structures to live in, or we live in small huts if you're an indigenous tribe. Now, here's the kicker. You listening to this? Here's the kicker. There isn't an animal on the planet. There isn't an animal on the planet that has to cook their food. I don't care where you are as a human being. You cook your food. The only thing we eat raw is some vegetables, and we have to watch that, and fruits. That's it. Anything else we have to cook. Animal sees a bug. Tasty. Piece of meat. Let me kill this animal, eat it raw. You can't do that. So tell me, based on what they're telling you, how you evolved based on the planet. Yes, you have technology, but, you know, recent reports, you have to look at this stuff. You have to look at this very carefully. They said Lady Gaga has an IQ that's 166. They say Kim Kardashian has an IQ 140. Now, we also know intelligence can be overestimated and also underestimated at the same time. The reason why I say this is because chimpanzees can use a computer and they have better memories than humans. So let's not go crazy with these IQs. But in respect to being adapted to the planet, you as a human being are really not. You are an anomaly on the planet. You do not make any sense. This is food for thought, and I did this for feces and giggles. You don't make any sense. So far as evolution is concerned, everything looks correct until you get to the human being. What are you doing here? Doesn't make any sense. Now, here's the other kicker with this that you need to think about. When someone's lying to you, they know the truth. When someone's lying to you, they know the truth. Always remember that. You might not be able to tell the truth. You might not be able to find out what the truth is. But you can look at the evidence and say, eh, what you're telling me doesn't add up. Doesn't make sense. We evolved? Really? No, I don't think so. It seems like I'm working against the planet on a constant basis. It seems like I'm not really that smart. I'm rather clever. Hence why you have the Fukushima disaster. That's clever technology. It's not smart. The nuclear radiation goes into the ocean and destroys the whole planet. That's what you humans do. Not really smart. You're clever. And you're really not adapted to the planet in no way, shape, and form, except for the fact that you can breathe the oxygen. Now, that's just food for thought, feces and giggles. And just think about it for a while. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
As always, as ever, the captain lays it down and gives you food for thought, and I would expect no less. You know what? I want to give an anecdote, and that anecdote is yours truly. I'm just going to play a clip. I was on Coco Mode show, Coco Mode, courtesy of SiriusXM. Shauna Renee, who is the daughter of radio legend Joe Madison, and I'm just, you know, no real preface for this. I'm just kicking it. I'm going to throw it out there. They were talking about Jay-Z and Beyonce as well as world star getting a gig through Adult Swim, Cartoon Network. So the minstrel industry expands. Doesn't necessarily contract, but it expands. So this is just yours truly just kicking it. Hold on.
Time. Afro Nerd from New York.
Yes, Shauna, good morning.
Good morning.
Briefly, I think there needs to be a connection made between what happened with Jay-Z and Beyonce and World Star Hip Hop. To me, it's the same ball of wax. You know, when I call up, I have this whole thing about minstrelsy and minstrel culture. And this is exactly what it is. I didn't feel anything with the Beyonce affair. Because to me, and I had to be honest with myself, I'm saying, why do these people anger me so much? And I think what I came up with is they don't give me a sense of black pride. Not that someone else has to do that, but it would be a nice additive. You know, my parents' heroes, who are my heroes also, when you think of Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier and, you know, all these heavyweights, they gave you a sense of black pride, and these folks do not.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and what has happened also is we have a culture that has made black dysfunction. I want your audience to really listen to what I'm saying closely. We have made black dysfunction profitable. And just like the old saying, there's always a job, or there's always work at the post office, there's always work at being a black clown. And no one wants to address this. If we have mythologized the white man, and a.k.a. Donald Sterling, we will put fire to his ass, but we will not do it with the minstrels. So either we're going to step up, contact Viacom, really put the fire to the folks that may look like us, but they're not favoring us, or we have to wait till the next white thing comes along, and then we will be empowered.
Mm.
We only move when it's a white man in front of us.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you. I agree with you 100% on that. You are right. We will fire up and hit the streets when a white man does something. But when a black person does something, we just shrug and in some instances will justify it. You're right about that.
And it's
right.
happening with too much frequency, Shauna. Mm-hmm. Every show that gets green-lighted seems to go this direction. When it's something else, well, we don't know how that will work. But when it's a nut or a clown or someone pulling off a wig, we will put money behind it and we will exalt these people.
Well, and it's not even the money, and I got to let you go, but you may...
That's it. Just an anecdote. Doing what I do.
That was good.
Again, Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk should be appearing on Sirius XM. I'm just, you know... It would be a dangerous show. I tell you right now, I would have a slightly edgier persona, if that's possible. I know me. It's one thing to be on the internet. It's another thing to be in another venue where I know that I'm going to have to pull out all the stops, Captain. So it will happen eventually. I'm just confident that it will. But, you know, on one level, we have to kind of hone our chops in this venue, but the truth cannot really be denied. The truth cannot be denied. Matter of fact, I have to reference from the Honor Guard, Iron Man, Mr. Starks, where he used to use the term the unattractive truth. The unattractive truth, that when you speak in a certain manner, just as if a doctor would give you a certain diagnosis, you're not going to take kindly to your doctor if he tells you you're suffering from some ailment. But it is what it is, and you have to learn how to deal with that. So that's what we're dealing with on our own as far as trying to disseminate facts, disseminate a point of view. And many folks of varied ethnicities, but we talk predominantly about folks of color, the truth is unattractive to them. Where's my Halle Berry clip? I can't find it. But it makes me feel good. Make me feel good. That's what it is. So I see she's slowly warming up to the Afro Nerd. She's starting to – I'm getting – the percentage is going up. I think it might have been 80% a couple of weeks ago. Now it's 100%. So anyway, folks, we have a lot to get to.
you know, I got an email, as I said before we went to the musical break. And the email, they know who to send it to. And I think at one point I would have been frustrated by getting this news and what happened. Now it's just par for the course, Captain. It's just the way things are. Bob Beckel, who is the liberal representation on the Fair and Balanced Network, and I say that in quotes. And this is, again, you know, coming from a liberal, it's like Harry Reid said of President Obama that he was had a fair complexion and did not necessarily speak with a discernible Negro dialect, and that's what made him successful and made him enable him to be in the White House. But that was coming from a liberal. But, hey, you know, he's on our side, not mine, but I'm saying that's the predominant view. That's the hegemonic view. The hegemonic view is that, well, you know, we'll let that slide. If it came out the mouth of a conservative, it would have been a little bit all over. It would have been a wrap for him. And I suspect this same thing is going on with Mr. Beckel. He makes a comment about Condoleezza Rice, former National Security Advisor, former Secretary of State, extremely poised, well-versed, highly educated woman of color. Her prowess and all those accolades really cannot be denied. But she, unfortunately, in quotes, is a conservative. And she was aligned with a administration that just really was not that successful. So she's got problems. But as a person, as a personality, as someone who is highly accomplished, you would think that there really would not be a controversy with her being someone that that anyone could look up to. I'm not even going to just put this on the black folk, that it's just black people that should be proud of someone or be able to look up to this woman. But for the sake of this situation, and even more, and really getting even more specifically, quote unquote, those from the ghetto, according to Mr. Beckel, are not going to be able to really get with her. She would not be an ideal role model, according to Mr. Beckel, for the ghetto folk. And you know what? There are quite a few black folk, I'm going to say maybe a majority, if you're going to go based on statistics and based on just how many folks vote democratically, that would probably agree with Mr. Beckel. I don't think there's going to be any real dissension or any kind of critique toward him. We're seeing it making the rounds on the internet, but no one's going to come to Dr. Rice's defense. I don't see that happening, especially a black person, unless there may be someone who has a conservative bent. I want to play this clip and give you his inimitable wisdom, and we'll just unpack. This is Mr. Bob Beckel, Fox News correspondent on the Five, the TV show The Five. And he's kicking it, repping the black folk, or so it would seem. Hold on.
Well, a lot of you might remember this powerful moment from Condoleezza Rice's speech at the 2012 RNC.
And on a personal note, a little girl grows up in Jim Crow Birmingham, the segregated city of the South where her parents can't take her to a movie theater or to a restaurant. But they have her absolutely convinced that even if she can't have a hamburger at the Woolworths lunch counter, she could be president of the United States if she wanted to be, and she becomes the Secretary of State. Yes. Yes. Yes, America has a way of making the impossible seem inevitable in retrospect, but we know it was never inevitable. It took leadership, and it took courage, and it took belief in our values.
Well, less than 2 years later, Eric Holder painted a much more grim picture of race in America. Here's the Attorney General at Morgan State University this past weekend.
Codified segregation of public schools has been barred since Brown, but in too many of our school districts, significant divisions persist and segregation has reoccurred, including zero-tolerance school discipline practices that, while well-intentioned and aimed at promoting school safety, affect black males at a rate 3 times higher than their white peers.
What a difference in speeches. Bob, this is the first speech, really, that has the Attorney General has gone off about race since the speech that he gave in 2009, where Rahm Emanuel was very angry that the Attorney General stood up and basically called everyone in the United States a nation of cowards. Mm-hmm. Why does the Attorney General choose these messages?
Well, because there's a lot of truth to it. That's why. And I think that when you have the federal court, the federal jails incarcerate black men and give them 30% more number of years in prison for the same crime as a white man gets, there's something wrong with that. When you have schools in the inner city that used to have some white students in there, now all black, when you have these zero tolerance programs for anything that you do wrong, it affects black children. If you look at it, there is still, and I say this over and over again, there is still racism in America. It is not the way it was before. We've made a long and determined road away from Jim Crow. But let's also keep in mind, she grew up in a middle-class black family. And we're talking here about people who are in the inner city. I'm not sure Condoleezza Rice is the person that I would necessarily turn to as a symbol for these people who live in the ghetto.
Really, Bob?
Wow.
That's where you're going to go with this segment?
That's exactly right.
Well, at least jump in here. Two things that you and Eric Holder.
All right. That's it. That's the most I was able to pull in such a quick amount of time. I'm going to pass the mic to the captain in a moment. I will say this, though, and just a couple of other things as I'm listening to that diatribe. And I see a black achievement, BA, critical of the election of Ros Baraka. Yes. I think I didn't get a chance to unpack on that. Maybe I'll combine that with this because they're the phrase we always say, tangentially connected. They're somewhat tangentially connected with this idea of the authentic black person. And, you know, something else that's troubling, I was trying to pull audio, speaking to B.A., a friend of the show from Maryland. I was trying to pull the audio from the New York Open Line program, Entume, you know, the artist, of Juicy Fruit. He is a frequent contributor. I think he was more involved at one point, but now he's kind of pulled back. Anyway, that show, the local New York show, Open Line, there was an interview with both gentlemen that were running during the mayoral campaign in Newark. Shavar Jeffries, and of course Mr. Baraka. Baraka now, he is the mayor. And one of the callers said something highly offensive, and she really was not called to the carpet. And it goes into proving what Mr. Beckel is talking about and what he is affirming. I think this is not going to be controversial. This is not going to be controversial. It's making the rounds on the internet, but it should be. Another favorite word, deconstruct this. When you really deconstruct it, you see clearly that there are, let's say that she isn't, for feces and giggles, as the captain says, let's say she isn't the greatest role model for quote-unquote ghetto blacks, and which I don't agree with that. But let's say that is the case. Where on the scale would you put her with the folks that are in the ghetto or represent the ghetto now? You know, is she number five? Is Chief Keef number two? Is Ros Baraka number eight? Is Reverend Sharpton number 7, I mean, number 11. You know, who best represents, quote-unquote, the interests of inner-city black folk? I mean, is it Sharp James? Sharp James, the former mayor of Newark, who was brought up on charges, criminal charges, pilfering, that kind of thing, giving real estate on the low for a couple of bucks, I mean literally a couple of bucks, to his paramour. You know, the Academy Award-winning documentary, Street Fight, showed the contest, the mayoral contest at that point between Cory Booker, who's now Senator Booker, between Cory Booker and Mayor Sharp James, who was the incumbent. And Mr. Booker did not win the first time around, won obviously the second time around. But the first time around, a lot of vitriol, vituperative language, not black enough, Rhodes Scholar, too well-educated, too polished, too bougie, wasn't endearing to the inner-city black folk. He wasn't repping them. They didn't really like this guy. Folks, there's a certain segment that just do not trust well-educated people, irrespective of race. But if we're going to talk about race as an intra-racial thing, it is highly concentrated with black folk, highly concentrated with, I should say, dare I say, those who may not be well-educated or from humble beginnings or have a radical leanings. You have educated folks who are radical. They talk that talk. They love those type of people. But those who have a couple of degrees, poised, nah, not well-liked. And that's what's going on here. But the thing,
well, it seems like we lost D-Bert, Afro-Nerd. I'm just going to get into my own little segment pertaining to this because I believe the people still can hear me. Now, let's eliminate – this is the captain speaking. Oh, wait a minute. We have him back.
Sorry about that. Somehow
– okay, go ahead.
Somehow I was dropped off. Okay. Sorry. Somehow I was dropped off. Yeah, so the bottom – I forgot where I was. Tell me where I was, Kat. I got so caught. Where was I?
I was already ready to start my diatribe, so I don't know exactly where you were, you know.
All right. Go ahead. I'll come back to it. I was almost done anyway.
Okay. All right. What I'm going to do here is eliminate the emotion, because once
the power
a white
that
man,
be. Go ahead.
Quote unquote, white man says anything that affects black people directly, everyone gets all emotional, whether it's right or wrong. That's what people do, and you know what happens when you get emotional? It defies your ability to reason. It defies your ability to reason. So that being said, let's go back in time. Remember the great TV show called The Cosbys? With Dr. Bill Cosby, do you realize how many black people, not just based on my own empirical evidence, but general consensus, is people that actually put information up that said they thought that was an entire fantasy. They didn't think that was representing black people at all. They felt that it could also never happen. So let me tell you my story. I saw the police officer. This is in the 80s now, the police officer that was married to the nurse. I saw the nurse that was married to the lawyer. I saw the lawyer that was married, person that owned the mechanic shop. All of this during the 80s. I didn't get to see the lawyer who was married to the doctor, as they did in the Cosby show. I didn't see that. But what I just explained was not a far reach. It was just a little step over from that situation. So Dr. Bill Cosby, when putting this show together, he innately understood that observation creates reality. It creates change in the reality around us. I'll explain that deeper much later on a long-winded diatribe, because it is the most important thing you must understand in how reality is created. And if you notice, certain powers that be control observation based on the Copenhagen interpretation. I'll explain that deeply later. Not now, but later on. A lot of black people felt, no, that doesn't relate to me. There's no way. They didn't even feel this is something that they could aspire to do. It was just out of their reach. So now we go forward. Yeah, Barack Obama, their president, United States. There's a lot of black people that said, oh, he doesn't represent me. He's educated. He speaks well. No way, shape, or form. This is black people. Now, of course, the educated black people said, right on, let's go. That's my man right there, you know? But a lot of black people said, no way. It didn't resonate with them. Having the skin color is not good enough. It doesn't resonate. Does not resonate. We also know, now I have to go with Christian theology, and this is important, because there's 2.2 billion Christians in the world. A lot of energy there, a lot of energy. So you have to respect it. In the Bible, you know the story about David and Goliath. David, a little man. Goliath is a giant. David slews Goliath. Now, why does God throughout the Bible, if you believe in such things, if you believe in such things, if you believe in such things, take little men and bring down these huge systems throughout the Bible? Because God wants to show you how powerful you are. You always take someone with very humble beginnings and raise them up. That's what they do throughout the Bible, to show the power of God. They always say, too, in order to lead the masses of people, you have to come from humble beginnings and then straighten yourself up. Get polished. This allows you to resonate with the people that are below, the low-level people, and also, because you have gotten polished, you can also resonate with the higher people. So now you can bring everybody in together. This is what they say. Doesn't necessarily pan out like that, but it definitely makes sense. We also know in your lowest levels, you gather your most power in order to spring forward. Just look what happens when you jump. Try to jump high without bending your legs. You don't get too high off the ground. But when you bend, you gain a lot of power. You gather your strength in the low levels, and then you can spring off the ground. Some people will say jokingly, this is why black people can jump so high, because they're coming from the bowels. They can gather all this strength. So a lot of us feel that in order for us to be led in any way, shape, or form, we need somebody coming from the bowels to clean up their act so they can get a bit of polish, get a little education, learn to speak better. And this is supposed to be able to lead the masses of the people. But a lot of times it just doesn't work out that way, though. It just doesn't work out. So what you want to do in any form of leadership is you have to put your best foot forward. Sorry to say, the best foot at times comes from the middle class or the higher middle, upper middle class, and that's what we have to put forward as far as our leadership. That's just the reality of it. And those other people that can't follow suit and can't understand that, it comes into a level of understanding, which we know we do not have in humanity today. You have knowledge, you have wisdom when to regurgitate your knowledge, but you lack understanding. This is just the reality of the situation. So you need someone like Condoleezza Rice because you don't necessarily have that perfect situation, the David and Goliath situation, because a lot of times it just doesn't work out that way for us. This just doesn't work out. Back over to you, Seraph Lerner.
Yeah, before the audio dropped, what I was getting into, and I'll be brief and then we're going to go to a quick break, I was saying that, you know, there's such a love affair with black folk and the Democratic Party. And I'm not saying that black folks can't be democratic, but I think we should be more pragmatic than democratic in the sense that I've said this on repeat so many times, it just makes sense that
you're not always going to be in a position where the Democratic or the progressives are going to be winning. What happens then? What happens the next go around when you do not get a Barack Obama or a Hillary Clinton or what have you? You need to have 20, 30, maybe 40% of your vote levied towards the opposition. It just makes sense. Look what happens with these, you know, especially during a national election, and you see these states that are non-committal, like Ohio or Florida. People don't care. Those who are running are not caring about New York or any of these states that are clearly red or blue. As a New Yorker, Barack Obama and Romney, they really weren't coming here. They knew where this was going to go. But they sure enough made sure that they were going to be in Ohio or in Florida. They were there because they were noncommittal, the state that is. And that's exactly how your vote should be. But if they know without a doubt, with great accuracy, how you vote, because you vote the same way, you have blind loyalty, emphasis on the term blind, they don't have to do anything for you. No matter what you do, you're like the abusive wife. You're going to come back regardless. You're going to come back to the house. I don't care if I was an abusive husband. It wouldn't matter. You're coming back anyway. You're not going anywhere. So, you know, you see how this loyalty, what it has gotten you. And you see that many of these cities, these inner cities that are democratically controlled, democratically run, and black folks, they're in worse shape than ever under democratic regimes. So it makes you wonder the mindset. These are from people that allegedly love you, and you're not getting anywhere. So it boggles the mind when someone like Mr. Bekel says that, well, Condoleezza Rice, she really wouldn't be an ideal role model for inner-city black folk. They really couldn't deal with that. But those who do represent them, I'm being repetitive, but I want to really drive this home, those who do or who are representative, I mean, what's the litmus test? Where's the success? It is what it is, folks. And again, referencing Dr. Rice, I mean, you know, you can go through YouTube, do the research. There are many folks. We saw what happened at Rutgers recently where she was denied the opportunity to speak, you know, to address the graduating class, give her commencement address. She was denied that because of politics. But if you go into her history and go through the archives, you will see that she speaks very, very candidly about race. Very eloquently about race, very poised about it. I mean, mind you, she was raised in the segregated South, and she was friends for girls, the very tragic, to this day it's very tragic, very well-known 16th Street Baptist Church bombing. You know, the four little girls, that documentary that Spike Lee directed a few years back, I think for HBO. She has quote-unquote street cred, believe it or not. But, you know, Shavar Jeffries, one quick thing. Shavar Jeffries, this is where it becomes even more troubling, ladies and gentlemen. It becomes even more troubling about this notion of being educated. Shavar Jeffries, again, the gentleman that lost the bid, the mayoral bid, for Newark. He comes from humble beginnings. He has Ivy League cred now. Single parent home. Quite a few foibles and hindrances. I mean, his story could have easily gone in a different direction. But he comes from where they come from, Captain. He comes from where they come from. didn't have a silver key, became educated, he progressed, he excelled from that environment, and you know what? That's not good either. So I'm completely confused. And the listening audience, and you can email me and explain this to me. So what is it that some of these folks are talking about? Because it's one thing to talk about Cory Booker, who came from a certain environment and has all these accolades. We could talk about that. But then it's someone who comes from you from where you come from and progresses, and you don't like him either. He's still bougie. He's still bougie, but he worked toward that goal. Coming from meager beginnings, from humble beginnings, still, you know, you grew out of your blackness now. So you can't win under those circumstances. You can't win. You can't win. I don't want to say black folk are doomed. I don't want to say that. But when you really get into what this is about, it comes off like if you're successful and you come from these environments, if you're successful, so you're no longer real, you're no longer desirable. That is unexplainable.
Tupac, please. He's going to tell black people what to do.
He recites some history.
Please, all these gangster rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks in West Virginia and be the most populous state.
By far my most favorite intro clip, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to a quick groove. Again, you're giving you an extended blast. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Let's go to an oldie but goodie, a classic. This is from the Truth and Soul album, when they still made albums. The Mighty Fishbone, Freddie's Dead, covering the great Curtis Mayfield. We'll be right back. You know what we do. We groove. Let's hold on. We'll be right back.
Please.
trying to find. This could be such a beautiful world with a wonderful girl.
Oh, Wonder Woman, why can't we brothers protect one another? No one's serious, and it makes me furious.
Fred is dead.
Don't be misled. Just think of Fred. Everybody's misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another Jughead clan pushing dope with a man. Fred is on the corner now, and if you wanna be a chunky wild.
Again, the mighty Fishbone giving the best we try. Urban alt groove, folks. Freddie's dead. We got a call. Let's go to the call, and we will unpack and unravel, use our electron microscopes to do what we do. Okay, this is 301. Welcome to Afternoon Radio. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Yes, thank you, D-Bert. This is B.A. Hello, Captain Kirk. How you doing this evening?
How's it going, sir? Doing
great,
well.
Great. Yes, I called in quickly to Lynn. Hope you haven't moved on. I've stepped away for a minute.
That's all right.
About the election of Raz Baraka, mayor of Newark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was watching my alma mater's commencement a couple weeks ago at Howard University,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking on the rostrum on there, you know, this august university, and I see puffy combs ready to give the commencement address.
Yeah.
I see the mayor of Atlanta, Kasim Reed, introducing him, and behind him I see the interim president of the university, a renowned cancer surgeon, Dr. Wayne Frederick. And I'm looking here, and I'm like, I can't believe this. 25 years ago, I knew all three of these guys. Were all on the campus with me. I knew them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying to myself, you know, and Raz Baraka also was on the campus at that time. And, of course, Kasim was running for mayor of Atlanta when I met him back in 1988. And Raz was running for mayor of Newark back in 86 when I met him. These men, you know, if you see them, you know, go on in life, let's say this, Raz Baraka, he's worked for everything he's gotten. And nobody give him the mayor of Newark. Raz has been running officially for mayor for 20 years, since 94, taking his lumps. He's lost campaigns for council. He's won campaigns for council. All right, now, the question is, a lot of people in mainstream, black world, you know, the bourgeois, the Howard University elites, the Hamptons, the FAMUs, they don't think someone with a cultural nationalist, black nationalist sort of perspective can maneuver in the mainstream, that they should be mayor of Newark or mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. All right, this is why I look at the website of Howard University, their press releases, no mentioning of the election of Raz Baraka, none. Not saying that, you know, Howard University has far, you know, distinguished alumni. Being mayor of Newark is no biggie to Howard, I'm sure. But, again, not a peep, not a mention at all. See, I know where you're coming from your perspective. is that certain types of black people are not appealing to the masses, and that's true. But in the case, I think, in my opinion, of Raz Baraka, it's also true. Raz worked for that mayoralty. Sharp James didn't get after him. Like I said, he lost when Cory Booker became mayor of Newark. He had to work for that. Raz couldn't raise a nickel 8 years ago. He had to build up his reputation and let people know that he could lead, being the son of Amiri Baraka. That wasn't necessarily a boon for him. Not saying that it hurt him or he was ashamed, nothing like that. But, I mean, with the controversy, that just didn't square 100% in terms of being elected mayor. But here he is. He's mayor of Newark. And I can just tell you, he worked for it. He paid his dues for that. They nobody just rolled that out and gave it to him.
Well,
and I don't know his style, if it's going to jive with the political landscape of New Jersey, you know, but I wish him the best, nothing but the best.
Well, listen, you know, you're highly respected here,
yeah,
and you always drop gems, and I will concede where I see that a concession needs to be made. My issue with Raz Baraka, is I'm not talking about the work that he put in. That's not what I'm talking about. I just have an issue with black folks that have this ill-defined or murky measuring stick for blackness. Who's down? And I think you would agree with this, that some people, well, many people that are quote-unquote deemed to be representatives of black folk, that because they're down, aren't really always down. Many of these cities and towns, if you go back 20, 30, 40 years ago when they really started allowing black folk to take some of these, there was a process to go from local politics to the presidency as far as having a black face in these positions. So the first guard of black folk pursuing positions were for mayors. You had black mayors. That when I was a kid, the Oracle told me about these people. You know, so the late Maynard Jackson and who's the gentleman from? Coleman Young and all these people. I looked up to them. I really did. But when you start, when you get older and you take the plug from the back of your neck and you from the back of your neck from a Matrix film, you start to see that, you know, these people were in charge of areas that were rife with urban blight and corruption. Detroit, look what Detroit is now. Look what Detroit is now under decades of black stewardship from quote-unquote down black folks. I mean, what's the gentleman that's in jail now in Newark? I mean, I'm sorry,
Kwame Kilpatrick.
Kwame Kilpatrick. Now, I went through the Afro Nerd calculator. He was doomed in my eyes when I heard his name was Kwame. I saw Kwame. I keep it. You know what I mean. You know what I mean, B.A. I saw Kwame. I saw Steve Harvey suits. I saw gators. And I saw two earrings in his ear. And I saw that he was under 40, and he was they called him the hip-hop mayor. And he was so down. I will confess that the woman he was cheating on was fine as hell, though. I will say that. That's just my thing.
Okay.
It was cool for the passenger seat in my Corvette with painted toes. I will confess that much. She was bad. But beyond that man's in jail now. His father's in jail. But they were down black folks. So we have to
she's a Howard alum as well. I was there. She was there with me.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. You are right. So you had all the black folks that hit all these nebulous markers for being down. But the black folks that could still be crooked but are a bit more poised, they're a bit more articulate, they're a little shishi foo-foo. God forbid they went to a Jack and Jill function like yours truly and Mr. Starks. God forbid they did that. You're not the right kind of black folk. You're not the – from jump, from jump. Barack Obama was not. I remember. You might have remembered I was on Shauna Renee's show, and she jumped on me, trying to disagree with me that black folks initially were not endearing themselves towards Barack Obama from the beginning. He's from Hawaii. His mother's white. He went to Harvard. You know, even his wife is well-heeled. She's more down, but then she's kind of bougie too. You know, they were more. You know, he's not from the church scene. You know, he didn't hit certain markers. I'm getting sick and tired of the quick knee-jerk. You know what it is? It's the knee-jerk acceptance of the down folk versus the bougie black folk that gets on my nerves. That's all I got to say. I have nothing against Roz Baraka per se, but I know that his radical fathers, and I grew up under Leroy Jones and all these. I mean, these are historical people. But when
right.
you take off the veneer, and as you say, this is going for what you say. I listen to what you tell me. It's results. The results. The progressive results are.
I'm not trying to defend the foolishness, chicanery, the idiocy that goes on in the community. I feel you that I'm not in any disagreement with you at all. I'm just saying that there's another end of the spectrum, okay, where you have to judge individuals based on their own merit. That's all I'm saying. Again, I don't know. I said the same thing.
I'm saying the same thing, and they won't give it to you if you're too well educated, too well spoken.
What are you going to do?
You are suspicious. Listen, I call up these shows. I feel the tension when I call up these quote unquote progressive black programs. Just speaking the way that I speak and in the vernacular that I use, if I came off a little bit more down, even with how I speak, I would have a different reception. But because I speak in a certain tone, little in my words, this nigga, listen, I'll make a confession. I will make a confession, okay? I did a dating thing on the internet years ago, right? And I had a conversation with a young lady, just a conversation. A few words out of my mouth, of course I could tell you that she appeared to be a little bit on the hood side. So I wouldn't have considered it anyway, but I was going to be respectful for the conversation. She heard a couple of words from my mouth. You sure you black?
Hey, D-Bert, I've been there. Okay, I've met and talked to women, dated women, who told me that a couple of them were like blind dates, you know, when you call them up with friends, hooked us up, and told me I thought you were a white guy. So how did you think I was a white guy? What? Because you know, I was so far removed, D. Burt, from what was going on in the hood, so to speak. I didn't know that brothers was pulling up on women, black women, with a particular vernacular, because that just wasn't me. I didn't know what the cadence was in terms of dating a black woman. But there was a certain vibe that you had to give off.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was totally at a loss. And move on. That's all. Just move on, and you probably don't need it, don't want it anyway. You don't want the headache.
Hold on a second. I want to tell you two brief stories, very brief. One is Mr. Starks, very quick. At a corporate workplace going back years ago, and he told me something. He said a young lady was giving him kind of a signal, kind of a green light, but she also gave him like a backhanded compliment. Or not even a backhanded compliment. It was more of an insult, saying something like, "If you come a bit rougher, are you FFA? If you come a bit rougher, maybe you could get some." That's kind of what she said
right.
to him.
And mind you, this is a woman that was maybe had a degree or two, probably in management, but she liked a certain type.
Right.
And she told him to her face, come a bit rougher. This is an educated black woman. Also, in my case, at another corporate center years ago, working for American International Group, AIG, big multinational mm-hmm. insurance company. Young woman, very attractive. I was looking at her, but I wasn't, you know, I kind of have a nonchalant air about me. So I really was kind of not really paying attention. But she was fine. She said out loud, because some of these, you know, sisters can be kind of blunt. She says, well, I'm waiting for D-Bert to ask me out. I said, huh? What? I said, okay, I don't need a brick to hit me. I, you know, I'll take you out. You know, she was bad. I ain't gonna lie. I'm not going to lie. She was bad. Took her out. Had the vet. It was vintage. Dropped down in the summer. Kirk, you remember the drive-in theater out east that's no longer there?
Westbury.
Drove around. I know she was digging that. Stopped. Had a couple of drinky drinks. I would confess to that. And we were speaking, and she said to me, because she was getting comfortable, she said to me, you know, you're not really black, though. Like, huh?
Yeah.
I'm phenotypically black, okay? There's no like, Mariah Careyism with me, all right? Although in my book, everybody, if Mariah Carey's as black as Yaphet Kotto in my, how I think politically. Anyway,
right.
She tells me, you know, your father has his own business. You know, you haven't really suffered. You have never suffered. You're very calm. You know, you've never had any adversity. You know, you got it good. And I looked at her. I couldn't go any further. I just sat back and kind of slumped back and said, okay, this is the end of this. I couldn't go any further than that. It's like, you know, even when they like you, they don't really like you. And she felt it's okay to tell me, you're not hood, you're kind of straight and kind of easygoing, no pain, you know, no suffering, you're not black, you're not really a black person. So you have a set of black folks, BA, many of them that are at the voting booths, that you need to come a little rougher. You may not want to have a Rhodes Scholarship.
Yeah, but
that
let me just say this.
They're being rough.
Let me just add this. Yeah, but, you know, that's if you're black. You know, you need to be rougher. But, you know, if you have another persuasion, you good. Which And then when things blow up, all the things that they wanted out of a black man comes up and bite them on the butt. Then let's degrade the man. You know, he couldn't keep a job. He didn't treat me right. All this other, he cheated on me all the time. All this foolishness. But listen, what are you going to do? One of the things at the heart of it is, my opinion anyway, is a bit of depression that I really don't want no parts of it. Okay, like I said, this is 20 years ago, you know, when I was out really dating real heavy. And I saw it. I lived in Jersey at the time, and I thought it was Jersey. I just could not. And at that time, you know, the hip-hop, the gangster rap hip-hop scene was really, really taking off, and you even had MC Light. I'm on a rough neck.
Yep.
Like, and that was the thing. And, hey, if you didn't come out like that, if you didn't talk a certain way, like you say, you went a little rough around the edges, you know, you wasn't someone who needed protection or something, it wasn't going to work with a lot of women. And everybody is entitled to want and to like what they want and what they like and have at it. But again, in terms of that whole dating, like I said, the whole dating scene, and when we flip it and we go the other way, the same standards that we have for each other, I couldn't understand. We don't have for other persuasions. We don't. I mean, I'm just saying, men too. I have cousins, you know, who, you know, I'll never date a heavy set black woman. Okay,
well, you may be on.
I understand,
something.
But they love heavy set white women, man. Can't get enough.
No.
And if anything about their, you know, you fighting. I'm telling you, they throwing you out the house. You never coming back. They never gonna speak to you again. It's that type. Which okay, I understand. But that's man. That's how we are. You know.
No, I don't believe. Listen, across the board, I'm fair, irrespective of race. I'm at the point now where we have to be just fair, and expect production, as you always say. I learned from our audience. I mean, you kicked it a while ago when you talked about being able to compete. And I'm at the point now we're not showing the markers for being competitive. And black folks are still on this race thing where race is at the bottom of everything. Race is the answer to all our problems, or rather that not the answer, but is the root of all our problems, is race across the board for everything. I'm like, you know, that's wearing thin when you got blue, black, African originals, not unlike Vampire Diaries. I know I got to do a pop culture. You have miscegenated black folks, like probably on this phone, and the originals that are from Africa, and they're excelling. Now we want to be African again. That's the irony. Some of us want to be African again. Well, we didn't want it before, because now they're getting accepted in 3, 4, 5 Ivy League institutions, and they're originals. They're blacker than you or I, respectively. So, I mean, come on. The excuses are wearing thin. They're wearing thin. So, it is what it is, folks. VA is always.
Thank you.
Stellar supporter, man. Continue listening, and one day we'll hopefully be in another venue, man, so we can really speak the way that we speak, because for some reason, you know how this goes. The stations that I'm hearing, they don't want to speak the way we're speaking. Now, it's not allowed. They want to talk about hair pulling and weeds being taken out and nonsense. So, you know, it's just a lengthy fight that one day I think we will at least get our shine, hopefully.
Yep.
VA, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Listen, Captain.
Yes, sir.
I want to move. I didn't expect to get so candid with some of the things, but I thought that it applied.
It's emotionally
that,
given,
that,
so it's going to get
that
candid.
Whole. Well, you told me. You know, you're always always quite prescient about these things. You seem to be able to see that this. You said early on today that this is going to be an emotional show based on the topics.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't necessarily see that. You know, quickly, speaking of more down black folks, speaking of more down black folks, and I see.
Hold on. You don't want to lighten it up first? Talk about your Godzilla?
All right. We can do that.
Lighten it up first and jump back in.
All right. I'll talk about Godzilla. Shirlane McCrae, a.k.a. de Blasio, who was the first lady of New York City. I'll talk about that in a moment, but let's talk about the fact that I did get a chance to see Godzilla. Now, you and the uncanny Daryl B. spoke about the reboot of the Godzilla franchise this past Saturday during the Grindhouse show. I didn't get a chance to see it at that point, but I did see it the following day. You said you thought it was just average, if not moderate. I will confess, I liked it. I thought it wasn't a perfect movie, but I thought it was way better than the 1998 Hugh Broderick hot mess. I thought that visually it was on point. I thought the acting was stellar. Aaron Taylor, who we will see probably this weekend, who's going to play Quicksilver in the X-Men movie. You know him from the Kick-Ass franchise. He's in this as well as the great Bryan Cranston. I didn't get a chance to check out Q Storms, and I will probably after this broadcast. Our stalwart listener friend of the show, he has written a piece on Godzilla. I didn't see his piece, but I will. Amazing Spider-Man 2. I thought you could see the glossy corporate stylings on that from a mile away. I didn't feel it didn't feel as corporate, maybe because Toho Studios, the actual intellectual studio that's from Japan that owns the creature, the intellectual property, they were involved. So, you know, their involvement plus the American involvement, maybe it kind of toned down the Americanized corporate thing going on. But as far as the acting was, the acting was really like deadpan serious. I always thought that some of the older man in rubber suit versions of Godzilla were a little, you know, had a little campiness to them, you know, a little over the top. This was like if it was a 9/11 movie. That's the level of seriousness and pain that the actors conveyed and emoted. So I appreciated that. The only thing I'll say that I thought was a flaw in the film was, and I spoke to my friend, who incidentally is of Japanese descent, at the comic store right before this broadcast. Ray, shouting out Ray, he hated it. He hated it. He just went in. I got to get him to call the show one day. He just went in. He just thought that he did start to pull out some stuff that I could not critique. You might have mentioned this. He said the cutaways were atrocious. That when Godzilla was about to really mix it up and get it in, they cut, you know, like the elevator doors, that thing closed in one scene, end mm-hmm. scene, you know, and then just the cutaways where you didn't get a chance to see the infamous, the legendary brawls for the man in suit versions of Godzilla. He didn't like that. And he said it was like 19 minutes of the creature were shown out of a two-hour movie. He said that's nonsense. So, and that critique is out there. So not enough of Godzilla. Maybe they should have calibrated the acting, juxtaposed that with the action. The action and the acting weren't really, you know, they should have had a 50-50. The acting was more, you know, acting and human interaction was more like 70-80. The action might have been 20-15, something like that. Yeah, I was, you know, but listen, a part two has been green-lighted, that's for sure, 200-plus million from last week. It did what it needed to do financially. You know, I will say it's a little bit above moderate to me. A little bit above a moderate. That's it. I somewhat enjoyed it. After Spider-Man, right, anything would be better than that. To me.
All right. It's a fair assessment.
You know? All right, you know, let's go to another musical break, Captain, and when we get back, let's get back to, since you wanted me to lighten the load, and appropriately so, I should have lightened it, let's go back to more doom and gloom with Shirlane McCray, de Blasio. I don't think she goes by her husband's name, which is whatever. That might be the reason why there's some issues going on. But she made a confessional through a New Yorker article that essentially, well, she self-critiqued. She was self-effacing. You know, maybe being too honest about her reticence toward motherhood. And we see that her daughter, you know, she's had some drug issues. She's had some problems. Maybe this is rooted in that lack of a desire to be a mother. She said she became a mother at 40 years of age, and she was fully in full swing with her career. And she admitted she really didn't welcome motherhood. She wasn't comfortable with it. And her children, maybe her daughter more specifically, suffered because of that. I'll unpack further. There's an attachment. This wasn't just a blurb. That's the part that made it problematic. It just wasn't a blurb in New Yorker magazine. It blew up the spot here locally. So we'll talk more about that, but I think it's interesting. Let's go to a quick groove. As I said, this is Black Radio, Mos Def. Be right back with Groove.
Experiment Black Radio.
Radio, sucker, never play me. Triple shade of black, then my bleach should never fade me. They say he crazy, New York wisdom in the 80s. Killer catch administration, gangster renovation. Born out isolation, Asian ill communication. Asian Marvel, fiber actor, pestilential, microscopic soul, sonic remedy. Clinic right in the street, operating in the dark. Surgery of wounded heart, come together, pill apart, come together. Smoking on something good, praying for something better. From out of better, never rocking for forever, ever, 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 ever. Forever, ever, ever. It's still a secret even when you tell them dumb dummies. Hush money. Rent receipt, drug money, the cold blooded warm gun money. The chief rock a fuel injector, Zulu horse, papa dog, bookie. Bay, 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 bay. You're rocking, yes, you are rocking with the fresh, you are rocking with the depth, you are rocking with the best, you are rocking with the yes. Now you are rocking with the fresh, you're rocking with the depth, you are rocking with the fresh, the yes, you are rocking with the best, you are rocking with the fresh, you are rocking with the depth, you are rocking with the yes. Now you are rocking with the best, you're rocking with the fresh, you are rocking with the depth, it's a yes.
Zulu. Big bird fly down on the mountain pass. Only thing to survive the crash. Black radio. You wanna fly free, go far and fast. Built the last, we made this craft. From black radio. Black radio. Black radio. Black radio.
Radio, Mos Def. Now I think he goes by the moniker Yasin Bey. This is the midweek review edition of Afronerd featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afronerd Radio. The call-in number, we got about a little bit less than 30 minutes remaining, folks. We're giving you a full, just for feces and giggles, giving you more of a show, more of a full blast. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Right before the break, I was mentioning the First Lady of New York City. She is the spouse of His Honor Bill de Blasio, who was inducted at the top of the year of this year as the mayor of New York City. Perhaps one of the most powerful positions in the world, truth be told. You know, it's funny to think about a major city. But this is a hub. New York City is a hub. Who's to say? I'm curious because Mr. de Blasio is still a relatively young person. Mr. de Blasio is, I believe, 52, 53. Actually, his wife is older. His wife is almost 60. So they got a few years in between. So anyway, I will be curious to see if he pursues the presidency, because this would be Barack Obama 2 in a way, because now you're seeing a really progressive family. You're looking at a family that is very representative of the now, of today. So that will be very interesting. I would like to see that. And again, I'm not progressive politically, but to have de Blasio, who's of Italian descent, and to have another African-American first lady, with this being a multiracial family, I would like to see that visually, to see there's nothing to stop that from happening, except I think, and this is the quote from the Oracle, who is the tangential producer of the show, and of course my father, that's the tagline, they look to be hippies. These are hippie folks, and hippies do not translate well. See, this goes, again, back to what B.A. was talking about a little bit with, are these down folk, radicals, quote-unquote hippies, do they gel well with the corporate structure, with Wall Street as opposed to Main Street? Do Main Street folks work well with Wall Street folks? I'm saying that I'm using that kind of in a metaphysical way. So that would be curious. But to the specifics, Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, and even the Daily News, who's somewhat conservative, but the New York Post is unabashedly a conservative outfit. They put her on the front page, bluntly, blatantly saying, I was a bad mom. So it caused a hoopla because, you know, she pretty much said that, but for it to be highlighted to such a degree and to really throw it out there, and I think that, you know, Mr. Starks talks about this, and the Oracle goes into this every so often, about that hippie stuff doesn't work well. And we, you know, he was a little disturbed to see that Chiara, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Chiara de Blasio, who is the daughter, I think she's 19, 20 years of age, that, you know, she admitted that, you know, she was an editor, a communications professional, fully in the swing of her professional career. She was 40 years of age when she had Chiara. She didn't welcome motherhood, and she admitted some things that perhaps a lot of women wrestle with, truth be told. But they may have some reticence about admitting it. She admits it to the New Yorker, and then she's put on full blast. And the Oracle said that, you know, there's something going on with this family. That, you know, that kind of laissez-faire, power fist, not really sharp in their appearance. You know, he feels, well, hey, it is, you know.
Oh, man.
Chiara has those flowers in her head. You know, they're very, very earth-tone black people. Very earth. And, you know, again, we're talking about literally Wall Street now. She has likened herself, or rather she was being, she and her husband were being marketed themselves pretty much the way we saw the Clintons 20 years ago, co-mayors, because she is a well-educated professional woman. Both of them met in the early 90s, they were dating in the early 90s under the Dinkins administration. So these are political animals. They're well-educated. But at the same time, they're of the radical shade. These are radical folks, earth tone folks, hippies. And the Oracle I must be very candid. The Oracle has an ability, maybe not that different than the Captain. Between you and my father have a type of prescience that you're able to see things. And my father said early on, you know, when he sees someone like Michelle Obama, he sees that sharpness. You know, it's not that rough around the edges thing isn't there. Shirlane. And this is not,
right.
this is not to take anything away from her success, but when you look at her, she's a little rough around the edges. She refuses to clean it up. Her daughter, flower child thing going on, she doesn't want to be, you know, she doesn't really want to, you know, you see how you see Whoopi Goldberg just absolutely refuses to just kind of trim around the edges? Doesn't want to, I don't want to say conform. You can be a nonconformist sometimes, but, you know, you got to pick your battles. You're in Gracie Mansion now. You know, what works for Gracie Mansion is not going to work for the White House. At least I don't think. I'm curious. You know, she was also captain. You know, she has a lesbianic past. How'd that happen? She wrote an article for Essence, I believe, in the early 80s, where she was, you know, full confessional, I am lesbian. You know, the right man comes around with the right equipment. I'm just saying. All of a sudden, what happened to that confessional? What happened? I want her to succeed. I want her husband to succeed, even though, you know, I'm not comfortable with how they see things and how Giuliani and the Bloombergs ran things. Now, I know that goes against the black trope, but I know I can walk down 42nd Street quite comfortably now, whereas 20-some-odd years ago, not so much. Your thoughts, Captain?
Well, the free spirit mentality does not work good with politics. Let me repeat that. The free spirit mentality does not work good with politics. Sometimes you have to come with conservative values with certain things in order to get certain things done. That's just the reality of it. And one thing that the conservatives normally have a very solid appearance. Here's what happens, you know. Not all the time, but a lot of times. Not all the time, but a lot of times. People who look a certain way do certain things a certain way and get certain results a certain way. Not all the time, but a lot of the times. I'm just saying. And time will tell all. So let's just see what happens down the line. But at a glance right now, it looks a little too free-spirited. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, at a glance. I could be wrong down the line. Maybe they knock it out of the park with the politics, her movements, and everything else. Now let me address the article directly. Maybe you just put a little too much information out there but with the article, and that's also what these people like to do. They just like to put you on blast. Maybe you got a little too comfortable. And maybe you got a little too comfortable because you're a little too free-spirited. So you don't know the ramifications of you being that comfortable. Just saying. That's all I'm saying. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, again, you know, this is an off the cuff piece for the New Yorker that the Post picks up and then puts it on the front page. So I feel for that. I don't think it's a comfortable thing. But like you said, maybe she became a little too familiar. And mind you, her work is in PR. Her background is in public relations. So she knows how this is supposed to go. And I don't know if I were her daughter, what I would want to hear my mom say, well, you know, really wasn't looking for that. I didn't really want to be a mother. You know, she grew to accept it, but I'm thinking of the Wedger now, for those who know, who is the co-producer of the show tangentially. The Wedger, I don't know if I even told you this, Kurt, the Wedger refers to herself in the third person. When she thought, you know, your mother, I said, Ma, you're right in front of me. Constantly. Your mama, she talks about herself in the third person. Now, the reason why I say that is she has totally embraced motherhood, even to the point where I say, you never say I. You know, you don't say I or me or whatever. You say your mother. So that goes to show you the 180 about from someone who has really embraced mothering to someone who says really wasn't feeling it. I was in my own thing. And again, I think that people are looking when someone's rough around the edges, they're looking to prick you. And because I think after Mr. de Blasio won the mayoral campaign, then you found out that Kiara had a drug problem, that she had overcame it. But the article was like, well, what is that? What is that? You know, you see this smiling cherubic family, and, you know, when you go into Ms. de Blasio's, or McCrae, I should say, which you see right there. She should be de Blasio, I would think, or even McCrae de Blasio. She's McCrae, he's de Blasio. You see that? You see the sexual identity confessional, and then the change up, and the reticence toward motherhood, and you see the daughter having a drug problem. You're not supposed to deconstruct it. Folks sometimes don't like you to do that. But I start adding things up, and things start to say, okay, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. But I wish them the best. I really do. I appreciate the family. I don't know about the politics, but I like the look as far as what it means to have a multiracial family stewarding the city. I think it's a good look, but the politics and the rough around the edges and the flower child thing, that's the thing that's problematic for me. That's it. Still more topics, obviously. 13 minutes remaining, Captain. I want to go into I want to talk about, you know, I was going to mention this Long Island legislator, excuse me. You heard about this story?
Of course.
Again, this is another local thing that for those who are not familiar with the Long Island tri-state area up north, you know, being those who are, you know, from New York, for those who are not from New York, or New Jersey, or Connecticut, they may not know about this, but this is a story that, again, reprehensible, it's reprehensible, but you have a few people, I see some black folks now from ourselves, Captain,
that say, hey, you know, this lawmaker, she was crass, but maybe she was onto something. You have a local legislator, why can I say legislator? Legislator, Ellen Birnbaum, Democrat, progressive. This is from Your Black World, yourblackworld.net. The article is entitled, New York Lawmaker Says Neighborhood is Bad Because African Americans Live There. Let me repeat that. This is what Ms. Birnbaum stated. I guess not that different than Donald Sterling. The Donald Sterlings are coming out of the woodwork. New York lawmaker says neighborhood is bad because African Americans live there. Nassau County Democrats are calling for the resignation of legislator Ellen Birnbaum, Democrat from Great Neck, after she was caught making racially inflammatory statements. The New York lawmaker, when speaking about the neighborhood surrounding the Yes We Can Community Center in Newcastle, allegedly said, this is a bad neighborhood because African Americans live there. Very few people would want to go there. Birnbaum was also allegedly overheard saying all African Americans want to do is play basketball, and who else from the rest of the town is going to go there? The Island Now reports that, I assume that's some kind of periodical, The Island Now reports that Robert Troiano, vice chair of the town of North Hempstead Democratic Committee, was among those at a rally on Monday chanting, Ellen Birnbaum must go. All right. Now, try my hardest. I try to be offended. I do. I try to get that burning in my belly about these things. One, I'm not shocked. And two, there's always a half-truth to some stuff. Now, I know this is not going to go
over. Three-quarter truth. But go ahead.
Listen, now, this is a local thing. Newcastle, which is adjacent to Westbury, Long Island, Westbury/Old Westbury, which is a pretty well-to-do area, moneyed area, especially Old Westbury. Newcastle, no one wants to go to Newcastle. No one wants to go to Newcastle. I think I've passed through Newcastle. I can count on my left hand. And it's always been going through it. Newcastle is notorious for being a problematic pocket on Long Island. You have pockets of Long Island, black and white, that have issues. And Newcastle is legendary for having issues. No one wants to go there. So the interesting part is Ms. Birnbaum is incorrect because she said, you know, it's always that swath, that big paintbrush, just blacks. But as far as a lower tier element that comprises Newcastle, oh sure. Oh sure. But she's not going to be sophisticated enough to go there. So she's wrong. She is wrong. But Newcastle is not the move. Now, going into this yourblackworld.net piece, when you go down the line and you look at some of the comments, you know, it's quite a few black folks that are saying, You know what? She's not that all out of pocket, Captain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people have to explain to me, why is that? Why are you seeing more and more black folks who are now these over-the-top racialized statements, when you deconstruct them, oh, yeah, they suck. Oh, yeah, they suck. Then there's like a kernel there. There's that kernel at the core where people say, well, Newcastle is not an inviting place. This crime and wildness going there. You know, what's that? I know you're familiar with this area, too, in Hempstead, Captain. What's that area? Is the area in Hempstead is one block. Why can't I think of it now?
Terrace?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
now Paris, I believe, has actually been gentrified a little bit. I think now it's kind of sort of pleasant, I think. But Terrace is one block, kid you not. Terrace is literally one block on Long Island, in Hempstead, Long Island, that looks like it was plucked from Brownsville. And that's another block now, a block that I avoided. I would walk, drive around the circumference, but never go down that block. That one block, that block was on America's Most Wanted.
Okay.
That block, you know, on YouTube, Terrace, was on America's Most Wanted. The block. So I find it interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I did pizza delivery years ago there. Years ago. Woo! Good luck. Be careful. Years ago. Woo! More than 20 years ago. Woo! Whoa, when it was rough. Projects right there. Go on. Back over to you, sir.
Yeah, we've got to be a bit more candid about these areas that are not that desirable for whatever the reasons are. You know, but she was wrong. Oh, yeah, clearly, because she used the term black as an umbrella. Now, if she had said, if she was a bit more sophisticated, and these people just are not. Yeah, that's one thing that I try to be fair. Cross-racially. There are many folks that just are not sophisticated. Now, she said, this is a problem area. It's not really a desirable area. And she didn't bring race into it. Then she probably wouldn't have gotten so much of a response. Fascinating for me is to see these commenters who are describing themselves as of color and saying, maybe she's onto something. I'm going to read a couple of them. One says here, unfortunately, I think this person is describing Lerome Armstrong, commenter at Your Black World. He says, unfortunately, she is actually correct in some ways. I am not a reactionary. I will also say that I have often heard black people say the same things. While I do not agree with the generalizing of black people, I do think that we as a people have to really look at ourselves and ask why we are so shocked when someone says some stuff like this, when we at the same time know that there is an element in some of these communities that fits everything she says. Not to mention, it's not just white people that feel this way. Black people, because of ongoing self-inflicted stereotypes, some of us continue, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but you get his point. Let's see. Let me look for something else here. We got about 3 minutes remaining, Captain. Okay, I can't go through all of them. But there are a number. See, other people say you can't paint the whole race with a broad stroke, which is what I'm saying. But also, people are starting to discern the black folks that are saying, hey, you know what? There's an element there, though. There's an element. So I find that fascinating. Then again, we got about 3 minutes remaining. You know, there's stuff that we just did not. You know, I thought that 2 hours we would be able to get through most of the topics, and we did not. Amir Thompson, a.k.a. Questlove, has a fascinating six-part essay at vulture.com. I would implore and advise our listenership to check it out, vulture.com. And this is a gentleman that is in the hip-hop community, very well respected, although he does a different type of hip-hop that, you know, we will play his music here and have. He's also been at Afropunk. I think last year was at Afropunk. And he, in these essays, really to overuse a term, deconstructs commercial hip-hop. And one of the essays is entitled, When the People Cheer, How Hip-Hop Failed Black America. 6 essays, vulture.com. Check it out. We will try to get to it perhaps on Saturday. We didn't get to the CDC proclaiming that black and Latino youth suffer from hood disease. I kid you not, a form of PTSD. So we may have to talk about that on Saturday as well. Closing in under a minute, Captain. Any remaining? There's a lot we can get to. There's topics after topics after topics. How the progressives don't have anything to talk about, I scratch my head. We have plenty. Any closing thoughts?
Well, real easy. You just said it. They're progressive. It's a little too free-spirited.
I think you're on to something.
That says it all. There you go. That's all.
All right, folks. Listen, we always have a great time doing this. It's gives us great pleasure. We do what we do. Let's go on out with the master. You know who he is. I don't have to tell you who he is. You know who he is. I play him all the time. This is Chocolate Live. See you on Saturday, 6 p.m., The Grindhouse. It's been real and a pleasure.
Lights off. Wait a minute. Turn this mic down on stage just a little bit. Just a little bit. Kind of good. Yeah. Baby, hit me.